Hi, welcome everybody. Welcome to the Be Healthy Summit and welcome Dr. Daniel Pompa. So happy to have you on.
I love doing these. Glad to be here.
Dr. Daniel Pompa is a respected leader in the health and wellness space, educating practitioners and the public on the origins of inflammation-driven disease, the therapeutic application of the ketogenic diet, fasting, ancestral-based health approaches, cellular healing, and detoxification. Although trained as a chiropractor, his authority is rooted in his own battle. Having overcome neurotoxic illness and heavy metal poisoning using his own unique cellular detoxification strategies. So, Dr. Pompa, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Why do you do what you do? What's your story?
I always say, I didn't choose it. It chose me. I was functioning as a very successful structural correction chiropractor when I ended up getting sick, and it led me into a different direction. So, you know, from pain to purpose is, you know, now my, not just my mantra, our whole family mantra, because we all have such a story. There's seven of us. As a matter of fact, I just had this here the other day, but that's us. Well, that was years ago. So these three are biological, and then we adopted these two because they lost their parents tragically. And he was on, you can see here, he was on the autism spectrum. He's normal today, works for my company. And Olivia is in chiropractic school now in her fifth quarter. And this guy works for our company. And anyways, and these ones are on their way. But the bottom line is, though, they're believe it or not, we all have a neurotoxic story, including my wife. And I won't necessarily get into that, but all of that has led me to what I teach today. And, you know, my story just briefly is it started with fatigue, and it went from unexplainable fatigue. I thought I was overtraining, actually, as I was cycling at the time and training for races. So arguably I was in the best shape actually of my life. And all of a sudden fatigue took time off the bike, got worse. It wasn't getting better. Then it went to headaches, and then allergic to every food, insomnia, panic attacks, thyroid issues, adrenal issues. It just kept trickling down. I, like most people, I spent a lot of time downstream trying to figure out what was wrong. I chased my adrenals. I chased my thyroid issues, my hormone issues. And I had one point realized it's the pituitary hypothalamus. It was something in my brain that controls your thyroid and adrenals, but I still didn't know what was wrong. I found Mad Hatter's disease online, and that is basically people making felt hats were using mercury as a part of their process, so they became mercury poison. So I got a mercury test, went to the best hospital in Pittsburgh, that's where I lived at the time, and test was negative. Devastated me. I actually ran like $5,000 worth of blood work that insurance didn't pay for, so I was just, I think my wife and I, we estimated just under $200,000 we spent, you know, chasing answers, which we didn't have. We remortgaged our home. So it was years of chasing the wrong thing. But I can't say that because it led me to the right thing eventually. But about a year or so later, I was working with a very bright endocrinologist. And he said to me one day, "Yeah, I think you have mercury toxicity." And I said, "I thought so too." And I did a blood test. He said, "Wrong test. You should challenge it out of your tissue because I don't think you have acute poisoning like the Mad Hatters. They were getting poisoned every day, so it showed up in their blood. I think you have more chronic if you do." So I did a challenge test where you take a chelator and pull it out of your tissue, and there it was. So I asked, "Where do you think I got that from?" And he said, "Do you have any dental work done around the time all this happened?" And as it turned out, I actually did, but I never made the connection. So I had two silver fillings removed, which contained 50% mercury. And look, that mercury from the fillings and other sources, I wore contact lenses in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s, and it had thimerosal, which contains mercury, in the saline solution. So putting mercury in my eyes, had it in my teeth. When I got those fillings removed, it just set my bucket overflowing. And that's when my symptoms started, but my problem accumulating mercury started far before I ever had any symptoms, truthfully. So yeah, I mean, that sent me into a different, I had to research how to get it out of my body safely. Most importantly, how to get it out of my brain, because I was right. it accumulated, according to studies I found, mostly in that pituitary hypothalamus. That's why I had so much endocrine hormone disruption. But it wasn't until I was able to get a certain amount out of that brain that I was able to get my life back. So everything I teach on my cellular detox came out of all of that. And like I said, it goes far deeper than that, because we ended up in shortly after I got my life back and really wasn't perfectly out of the woods yet. We inherited the two children, Dylan and Olivia, and Dylan was on the autism spectrum. So I started applying what I learned in my own battle to him. And like I said, if you met Dylan today, you'd never know it. So, and then my wife had her story, and my other children got a lot of lead from my wife, which is their story. So pain to purpose there, a long answer to a very simple question.
Wow, that's amazing. So what did you do to get rid of the toxins?
Well, you know, one of the things, you know, when you start looking online about detox, there's a lot that's not very good information. We'll just be nice and kind. You know, most of what is in our space is just kind of lives there, lives on, even though it's not correct. For example, there's a lot of weak binders used. Things like chlorella, cilantro, and even a lot of downstream techniques that I wouldn't even say are bad. It's just they're not going to get your life back, like colon cleanses. And when you go into health food stores, doctor's offices, they have the 10-day cleanse. You know, they're herbal cleansers. They're weak binders. They're not going to get something like mercury out of your brain. And oftentimes they just stir it up. When I say a weak binder, when you look at a real binder, there's a different couple types of real binders, one of which is called a sulfohedral group or a thiol group, which has sulfur and a hydrogen. It's in a crab claw, but there's a double claw on these real binders. And something like glutathione that your body uses to remove toxins out of the cell, it still is not a really strong binder because of the way the sulfohedral group is. Same with a lot of the other binders. They just have sulfur as a binder. So you need a real binder that holds on and doesn't let go. And then a product called Cytodetox that we later came out with has a different binding structure. The bottom line is this: I don't want to get into the biochemistry and bore people to tears, but if you don't use real binders, it's in and around the cell and in the gut, you just redistribute metals. And then the other big mistake is people are downstream doing colon cleanses and different things, even saunas. But if you don't upregulate the cellular detox pathways, if this is your cell, there is natural pathways that need to detox your cells day in, day out. Once those become exhausted, if you will, just to keep it simple, broken maybe is another word, you can do all this downstream work, you know, to you. One, sometimes, you know, it's important to get your bowels moving. I get that. That's why I don't think it's necessarily bad to do a colon cleanse. But ultimately, how did I get my life back? You have to fix the cell to get well. That's why people have hormone dysregulation. That's why they still don't feel well. That's why it's hard to lose weight. That's everything happens at the cell. And that's been my message for a very, very long time, 20 years.
And what other pillars are included in that cellular detoxification besides the binding?
Yeah. So you do. You have to use real binders in and around the cell that don't let go. But my 5 R's has become a roadmap to what I would teach doctors on how to upregulate that cell function so someone can get a lasting result. And, you know, the 5 R's really was birthed out of my frustration of giving lectures, me being very excited about these are the pathways that are, you know, we need to fix, right? This is what fixed me. It was, you know, I was dyslexic as a kid, but because of that, I have ability to read literature and remember where I read something 10 years ago. So out of me thinking I was stupid as a child with dyslexia and not being able to spell anything until 7th grade, you can imagine the trauma there. But really out of that came a certain gift in my brain that I could remember these things. And, you know, putting that together to get my own life back really was birthed out of the 5 R's. But I left the lecture very frustrated because I could tell that they didn't get it. So literally on an airplane, I started getting these ideas that were coming to my head, and I started writing them down, and it was birthed the five R's. And so R number one is, you, this is the obvious, you have to get upstream to the source of the problem. And we can talk about that, because there's a few hidden sources that most people watching or listening to this probably miss. We'll come back to all of these. Let me just rip through them. R2 is, you have to regenerate the cell membranes of the cell. That's what determines what comes in the cell and ultimately out. Even the inner membranes are critical for detoxification. If you don't regenerate them, you will not get well. You won't. It is absolutely, almost, maybe the most important of the R's. R number three is restoring cell energy. So I said, how important is R2, regenerating the membranes? Well, you can't restore cell energy without fixing the mitochondrial membrane, which is pivotal to how your cell makes energy. So every R plays to itself, or plays into one another. So restoring cell energy, why is that important? Because there's a theory called the Gibbs energy equation or theory. And it's basically that as cell energy drops, so does glutathione, and inflammation goes up. So we have to restore cell energy to restore the cell's natural ability to detox and ultimately downregulate the inflammation, which leads into R4, which is reducing inflammation. See, each one plays into each other. R4 is reduce inflammation. A lot of my fasting strategies play into how we reduce inflammation quickly. R5 is reestablishing something called methylation. You can't, if you don't raise methylation in a cell, you can't upregulate the cell's ability to detox. So that roadmap, if you will, those five R's are really how and what I teach doctors around the world on what we need to do for this epidemic of hormone dysregulation, of why people can't lose weight. It really is a cellular issue. Why people have brain fog, can't fix their digestion, and simply can't sleep, anxiety, don't feel well. This is a cellular issue. And that's what I'm passionate about.
And what can people do if they want to start doing that?
Well, I mean, if you look at the R's, you know, I said maybe we should go through them a little bit slower. R number one, if you don't identify the upstream causative factors that shut down the detox pathways of the cell, you're dead in the water right there. I'll give you three. And everyone watching this, this is important, because I get clients from all over the world that have been to the best of the best. And it's unbelievable to me that they miss these three so often. Let's start. Number one, hidden infections. Hidden infections are missed because people don't do the right diagnostic test. Everyone listening, watching, you need, if you've had wisdom teeth out ever in your life, you need a cone beam, C-O-N-E-B-E-A-M, cone beam. It's a 3D x-ray of your jaw. The reason, when you get a tooth extracted, whether it's a wisdom tooth or maybe you got extracted teeth for putting braces in as a child, who knows, but what happens is it heals over and it leaves basically a cave behind that becomes and holds infection that may not become a problem for 20 years down the road. These infections most often have no pain. So you don't say, well, I don't have pain here, nor did I. But the fact is it heals over, and these infections work their way into your sinus cavities, ultimately into your bloodstream. And even if it's in the lower jaw, it goes right into the bloodstream. So it creates autoimmune. We know that these infections on the side of the infection ends up with breast cancer, thyroid, lymphatic cancers. It creates a lot of different problems, like I said, from autoimmune to cancer, but many different conditions in between. There was just a study, it was 2018, February 2018. It was from the CDC, put it out. 7 out of 10 chronic diseases, they're linking to pathogens in the oral cavity. So meaning that these pathogens or infections, if you will, they are so nasty that they travel to different parts of the body and they drive chronic inflammation. And it is a hidden reason of why people do the perfect diet and do all these amazing things, and yet they still don't feel well. We know that these infections, of course, they can relocate, cause a heart attack. That's why dentists want to give antibiotics if they even clean teeth and or if they do any type of, find any type of pocket of infection. So we know they're deadly, but we know they're now, in the last few years, we know that they're leading to many diseases. You know, there was a movie that you should, it was taken off of Netflix because it was too darn true, but it's called Root Cause. And you can find, if you go to Root Cause the movie, you can watch it for free. But root canals, they're always infected, and these cavitations. You have to get a cone beam to identify if you have these infections. You need to look at this. If you have hormone problems, can't get well, can't lose weight, I mean, all those things I mentioned earlier, you have to evaluate this. And then we do teach a very specific protocol, what you do before, what you do during, and what you do after. All right, second one is mold. So many people miss it because you don't see it, right? You've had water damage in the past, mold is behind a wall, you don't see it, right? If your basement gets wet, you have mold. And mold is a biotoxin. I'm not talking about a mold allergy here. I'm talking about biotoxic illness. One of the very simple tests you can do first right now, $10, go to vcstest.com. Start there. It's a simple visual contrast test that if your contrast fail, like you start to lose your contrast ability. We're not looking at your eyesight here. Matter of fact, always, if you can't see close, wear glasses. But it tells you that when you take the test. But we're looking at the contrast ability. Are you having more trouble seeing at night? That's an indication you'll probably fail the test. But biotoxic illness, it attacks the nerves, one of which we can test is the optic nerve. That test is also, if you, there's a rows, A, B, C, D, E. If you fail row E, that's typically just general toxicity. But the bottom line is you can start there. Biotoxic illness from mold, it's epidemic. You could be working in a moldy building, in school in a moldy building. It could be your home. So there's different tests you can do. If you go to my podcast, I've interviewed experts on how to test your home correctly, because that's another problem. People don't get the right test done, do it the right way. But always test your body. Lastly, heavy metals. That's what got me. The problem is that people do the wrong tests. I did. And then once they say, okay, I do in fact have heavy metals, they detox it incorrectly. And that's a passion of mine. You know, the metals, especially mercury, is in the brain. And my detox, there's a preparatory phase, there's a body phase, and then most importantly, we lead into finally the brain phase, you know, which not only got my life back, but thousands of others and my son. So my passion lies here, because obviously people do this, the detox wrong. They typically miss the big, big stressors, you know, and I would add certain emotional stressors. What makes people sick, Stephanie, is a perfect storm. You know, you may have one of these infections, right? Maybe you had amalgam fillings out years ago, but the problem is the mercury from those fillings vaporizes, crosses the blood-brain barrier, and there it's locked as inorganic mercury until you do the right protocol to actually get it out. So you have this source, you have an infection, oh, and now you're in a moldy home, perfect storm, three stressors, or you have a source here. Maybe you've had other toxic exposures, silver fillings, mercury exposures, and then you have an emotional trauma in your life, your wife, your husband, you know, whatever it is. Physical trauma, chemical, and emotional. The body doesn't know the difference. It fills up your stress bucket, and then perfect storm, bucket overflows, you're sick just like I was. So we have to look at what these, you know, what created the perfect storm. And we have to go through. So this infection may not be why you got sick, but you won't get well unless you deal with that infection, as an example. Your silver filling may not be why you got sick, but you won't get well with that silver filling in, because it's vaporizing just enough mercury that your body's in trauma because the sources are there. We have to eliminate the sources, and then we have to get the cell functioning and open up downstream pathways. Sounds simple. This is why I train doctors. So anyway.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Thank you for explaining that. And nutrition also plays a big role in your health model, right?
Yes, it does. Yeah, you know, and I would say that, look, I know everyone has their diet that is their favorite, right? And some people bounce around between them, but you have your keto people, paleo people, you have your vegetarians, your vegans, and we can go down the list. You know, I talk about this in my book, but I believe diet variation is the magic. It's not one diet. When we study ancient cultures, they were forced to change their diet, not just seasonally, but as the food changed, they were forced to change. Now what we know scientifically is that was actually magic, because when we look at the new studies on the microbiome, really, we started out going, oh, bad bacteria, good bacteria, this, you know, and the people were looking at their bacteria, you have this bad one. Step away from it all. The only thing that we really have really learned is this. Very healthy people seem to have a diversity of bacteria. Oh, bad ones, good ones, all of them. Bad yeast, candida, E. coli, all of it is this diversity that we now know works to very healthy people. Well, we thought maybe we could give bacteria to create diversity. It doesn't work. So how do we create it? We've learned now that it's diet shifts. If you're stuck on the same diet, and people get stuck on the same diet because they felt better when they went to a paleo diet, a keto diet, a vegetarian diet. So they stick there, but that's the worst thing you can do. You have to, you know, vary the diet, which ultimately creates a diversity in the microbiome. So diet variation is a principle that I teach. It's chapters 3 and 4 in my book, Beyond Fasting. Another way that we do diet variation is feast, famine, cycles. Again, emulating ancient cultures, weekly, monthly, and seasonally. We have times where we're eating more, times where we're eating very little, times we're eating more. So we can create that with feast, famine, fasting, not fasting, a lot of food, high protein, low protein. I don't care what diet you're on. You could be on a more vegetarian-based diet, but these principles still apply. You have to vary your diet, and we want to emulate what our DNA is set up for, feast, famine.
And what about fasting? Do you recommend intermittent fasting or longer fasting periods? What's your take on that?
I recommend both. So I, for many, many years, I have intermittent fasted where, you know, I'll go, I pretty much eat probably in a 4-hour window, 6 at the most. I prefer that for me. I think some people can expand that window and definitely start more expanded. But even on a 15-hour fast, you get something called autophagy. And I'm sure you've had others speak about autophagy. That means during a fasting state, the body eats bad cells. It's that smart. Bad DNA, cells that aren't detoxing, right? Cells that are just not, they're too inflamed. It will take those cells down for nutrition when you're not eating. Here's the best part. It upregulates a new cell via stem cell. So it creates a stem cell and it makes a new cell. So we literally can recreate our immune system. We literally can regenerate our cells if we do enough fasting. So daily fasting. Even just 15 hours, you get some autophagy. Well, how do we get even more of this autophagy where we can really take out a lot more cells? We fast longer. Even 1 5-day fast a year, and I talk about this in my book, your cancer risk drops dramatically. Some say over 90%. I do 4 fasts a year. I'll do a pure water fast for 5 days. Then I'll do what is called a partial fast, where we just reduce calories around 500-600. And then I'll do another water fast, then a partial fast. So, and I don't know that you have to do that. I have watched my cellular age looking at telomeres, and now I'm doing something called DNA methylation testing. Because of my sickness, I was well over my cellular age, meaning my cellular age was well older, I should say, than my actual age. So I'm 54, right? So at one point it was, you know, I think it was 9 years older, right? Now, I think I'm 11 years younger now at the cellular age than I'm my 54-year-old actual age. So how does that happen? Fasting is a very, I think, the most powerful strategy that everybody can do. I mean, there's other strategies, but they cost a little more money. but fasting doesn't cost you anything. But adding in even 1 fast a year, emulating ancient cultures, the body goes through and gets rid of these. They're called senescent cells. And that just simply means cells that live too long. They drive inflammation. They drive, they duplicate into bad cells. this goes on and on to where you just end up one day going, gosh, I just don't feel good. Too many senescent cells. Well, how do we get rid of them? We fast through this autophagy daily, as well as longer fast. Now, caution, because many people start doing one meal a day, which I do that a few times a week. I'll just do one meal. I'll fast for 23, 24 hours. But here's the problem. Everyone can, too much of one thing can be bad. So diet variation also means if you have fast days, you need feast days. Remember I said feast famine. So if I have 2 or 3 days where I eat one meal, I have at least 1 or 2 days where I eat more, sometimes 3 meals, or maybe in 2 meals, I eat higher carbohydrates, higher protein, because that emulates a feast to my body because, you know, my core diet is probably lower carb than no doubt most of America, but lower carb than most people. But this feast days are very important. The lower carb that you are, you need feast days to remind your body it's not starving. I always tell people the feast days are as important as the fast days, but it's feast famine that creates, forces the body to have to adapt, just like a dietary change. And that adaptation happens by upregulating certain hormones. I call it hormone optimization, is how you adapt to these diet shifts, feast famine. So when you look at studies, and I presented them in my book, when you look at when they compared low fat diets, high fat diets, vegetarian diet, all these different diets, what won out most all for weight loss was feast famine. That's it. The variation won out every time. And when I interviewed Kristen Verde, she's a scientist that one of the first studies showed that. I said, Kristen, why is that? What's your theory of why the variation? And by the way, in her study, in her first study, they were doing standard American diet, not even a healthy diet, standard American diet, 500 calories, standard American diet, 500 calories. And it beat all the other diets. Why? And she said, well, we believe it's creating an adaptation. It forces the body to adapt. And how it adapts is a hormone optimization. So ultimately, if you look at why people can't lose weight, it's hormones. It's hormones struggling to communicate with the cell, ultimately, whether it's thyroid, leptin, insulin. But what happens is this feast famine creates a cell sensitivity to the hormones. And it's all to survive. That's really what it's doing. And it creates this upregulation or hormone optimization. So that's emulating what ancient cultures did. And all we have now is the science to say, oh, that's why that happens. So. Interesting.
Yes, for sure. And does it make a difference for men or women?
I think it matters more for women. Women doing low carb or fasting strategies, I think it has a more profound effect on them because especially when you put a woman anywhere near menopause, perimenopause, what happens is their hormones are dropping. If they're very healthy, their cells become more sensitive to the hormones. However, today, so many people have cellular inflammation driven by toxins, by the way, is the number one cause, but it makes the cells not hear the hormones. So as they get a hormone drop, it's very, very difficult for their cells to hear the hormones. Then they don't feel well. They start gaining weight. They start not being able to sleep normal. I mean, all these things start to transition. Well, here's what I want you to take home is, when they start doing low carb, which worked in the past, what happens is to make hormone conversions, you need insulin, especially the week before your period. That's when a woman will get cravings to raise up glucose. The body knows what it's doing. And then it raises up insulin, and then it can make hormone conversions better. So it was doing that to try to get more hormone into the cell because it was struggling. So because they become so disciplined with their low carb diet, they're not raising up their glucose and their insulin. They're having more trouble, especially around their period with these hormone conversions. So one of the things we learned with the doctors that I train is at least 5 days before the cycle, you listen to the body and you do high carbs. Now, I recommend doing high healthy carbs. So if you're lower carb, then you would just do 5 days of higher healthy carbs the week before. What we found is it transforms hormonally the rest of their month. So yes, the variation weekly is more important for women. And I believe sometimes they do better with 2 or 3 feast days, higher healthy carb days, and then low carb, or low calorie. So we don't want to do low calorie too long. We don't want to do low carb too long. We want to vary it and we get the best hormonal result. And that's all in my book. It's all in my book. So I know people are going, what did he say? What is? I want to get that down. How do you do these cycles? In my book, I give weekly strategies, monthly strategies, and seasonal strategies to that. And even diet, you know, I even have foods and, you know, to menus, et cetera, to help you.
Yeah, thank you for explaining that. That's so interesting. What foods should we avoid? What would you suggest?
Well, look, if you went to dinner with my wife or any of my five children, you would say, my gosh, that was the hardest process in the world, and maybe we shouldn't go to the dinner with Pompas anymore. But then when you learn why we're so adamant about this one thing, you'll go, ah, I get it. And I should go to the dinner with the Pompas more often. So you'll see all of my kids, and I don't start anymore. It typically starts with my wife, and we start pounding them on, do they use vegetable oils? Canola oil. So my wife has learned to tell them that she's allergic, because then you get the real answers, right? So the reason why you hear us pound that is because these oils are very fragile, and they're the key to the membrane, R number two, I'm bringing you full circle now. I said how important R number two is, regenerating the cell membranes, the cornerstone for detox, cornerstone for upregulating cell energy again. We have to get these membranes fixed. We hear a lot about omega-3, and it's good. But what we don't hear a lot about, we only hear the negative side of omega-6, and for good reason, because Americans, they're getting too much because of all the vegetable oils, all the canola oil. It's in everything. I mean, if you go to Whole Foods, it's canola oils in just about everything, right? It's like, so, and then we're eating grain-fed meat. So our omega-6 is way too high. However, omega-6 is the cornerstone of fixing the membrane. It's not omega-3, it's the 6. So when you eat these bad, rancid omega-6 as vegetable oil and canola oil, they make their way into the membrane, displace the vital omega-6 that creates the function of the membrane. Not the 3, it's the 6. And it displaces the good with the bad. Now you have a dysfunctional membrane. Now your cell becomes more toxic. The cell becomes more toxic because it can't move things in and out. Toxins are now in the cell. Oh, your DNA is in there. So now your bad genes start getting turned on. It's estimated that it creates 132 days of dysfunction when you eat a vegetable oil, canola oil loaded meal. 132 days, they make their way into that membrane and create dysfunction. Now, if you're super healthy, your body can dislodge it much faster, right? But this is based on average America. That's how much cell dysfunction. So that's what you don't eat. You make sure that these oils are out of everything. You have to read ingredients. I've done a lot of videos on these things, but you have to read the ingredients. You have to question if you go out to eat.
And what about sugar?
I think that's obvious, right? I mean, and I didn't start there because I think people get that. I think they're addicted to that. But again, I mean, sugar, we don't eat refined sugar in our home. We just don't do that, right? So, if we're out to dinner and have a dessert every once in a while, as long as it doesn't have canola oil, I'd sooner have the sugar than the canola oil. But the point is we just don't do that. It's not hard to take sugar out of the diet. It's not. You just have to read ingredients. And again, there's natural sugars in anything, right? You know, so we don't eat added sugar. If we use a sweetener, it's stevia, 100% stevia. That's what we would use as our sweetener.
And what foods would you focus on instead?
Yeah, so instead of what?
You said that you recommend a variation of different diets, but are there any foods where you say these should always be included in a healthy diet?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think you can go times without meat in your diet, but I think going long-term without meat in your diet is a mistake. I think that you need certain fats, cholesterol and saturated fat. If I asked your audience, give me the two worst fats that you think are the worst, they would say cholesterol and saturated fat. And actually, as it turns out, they're probably two of the most important as far as stabilizing the cells and cell membrane. As when we look at the cell membrane, it's called a lipid bilayer. on that are your hormone receptors. Now, these little receptors are riding on something called a lipid raft. That's a raft made of fat. So when we realize what stabilizes these receptors to your hormones, saturated fat, cholesterol. So we need them. So I think getting some of these things, like if you don't like meat, eat ghee. You know, ghee is a very, and make it a grass-fed ghee. It carries the energy from the sun. I mean, it's pretty an amazing food. You know, but eggs are another amazing source of meat. Fish, when it's clean waters, not farm-raised, but wild. Oh, I think all of these are very important. I think, obviously, vegetables. However, people go very successful. People with health conditions, when they move to a carnivore diet, that means a diet with zero vegetables. I mean, literally just meat and fat in their diet. And they thrive. Their blood work gets massively better. Oh, but if you stay on that diet, I would argue you'll create disease. Just like if you stay on a vegan or vegetarian diet. So again, I'm the guy who goes, yeah, I can look at this carnivore diet right now is going crazy, you know, because people are like, my blood work was this and now it's this, you know, we shouldn't eat vegetables. That's not true. You know, that diet shift is the magic, right? But if you stay on that, you're going to elevate a pathway called mTOR. High protein drives mTOR, which will age you prematurely. So good in the short run, bad in the long run. Same with vegan, same with vegetarian. So a variety of natural foods. Let's not overcomplicate it. You know, it's if we eat what God's given us, it's healthy. The key is the variety, changing it up. You know, that's what people are missing, I believe.
And what's your take on exercise? Do you think we should do it in a fasted state or should we eat beforehand? What do you think about that?
I love exercising in a fasted state. I think there's another hormone optimization that occurs. I think the old days, and I was one of them, that I would exercise, even if it was in a fast state, then I would come home and eat. We had a 20-minute window, we said, to get protein in. We just didn't understand biochemistry like we should have. it's never like, that sounds very logical, right? But as we learned more, it's like, oh, what we didn't realize is when you exercise in a fasted state, the body goes into survival mode. Remember, everything's adaptation. So to survive, what does it do? I have to protect my protein. It raises up growth hormone that lasts at least for a few hours after the exercise and this rise. So the moment you eat, you start decreasing your testosterone and growth hormone. So why not ride that out, right? Why not ride out that growth hormone and, you know, exercise in a fasted state, which creates that panic and that growth hormone rise and the cell being more sensitive to the hormones, and ride it out a little bit after. Even if you can ride it out an hour or two, you're still going to get a benefit. So, I mean, arguably, if you worked out for 2-3 hours, maybe you'd have to eat sooner because you depleted your glycogen, right? So that would be a different scenario perhaps. But I do believe in working out in a fasted state. I think it's a biohack. To optimize hormones and ride out growth hormone, and et cetera.
And if you do a 30 to 60 minute workout, what would you recommend? When should we eat again after that?
Yeah, like I said, if you could ride it out an hour or two, you're going to get some hormone benefit. If you can ride it out longer, you know, I have done, no one really knows, because I'm always asked that question. When is the perfect time to eat after you exercise? People have opinions, but I think because it's very different for people, that we get different answers. If someone's very metabolically flexible, right, meaning that when they're not eating, their body starts burning fat, they're very hormonally optimized, no doubt they're going to get a benefit from going longer. If someone is not very adaptable, they're stuck as a sugar burner, they don't use fat good as energy, they're going to do better eating sooner. Right? So that's why it's different. Now, I would argue that the latter is not a healthy state, meaning that even when, you know, I'm eating a higher healthy carbohydrate diet, when I'm not eating, my body immediately moves over into fat burn. How do I know? Because I measure my glucose and ketones often. So even if I'm eating a higher carbohydrate diet, if I exercise, not eating, if I go 4 hours without eating, my ketones will be above 1. Which means it looks like I'm in ketosis. But all that was happening is my body switched over to replenish its glycogen, it started burning fat like crazy, right? So my body does the right thing. If your body doesn't, then eating sooner may be a benefit to you. But I would argue, my book talks about how to become more fat adapted using variation strategies, you know, because that is a healthy state. So different for everyone.
And what would be an optimal meal after a high intensity workout?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that a meal containing, you know, you need protein eventually, right? It's going to optimize, amino acids are going to optimize that workout. I think that, again, healthy carbohydrates is still not a bad thing, right? I mean, bodybuilders knew what they were doing. I mean, they would come home and eat their chicken and potato, right? I mean, so it you know, no doubt that they were onto something there. That higher protein is going to stimulate mTOR. Now, again, mTOR is a pathway that vegans and vegetarians speak very negatively of because long-term it ages you. But I argue that spikes of mTOR are very anaerobic, which they are, or I'm sorry, anaerobic, anabolic, which they are. I argue that spikes of that are very healthy. Just like, okay, so think of fasting. That's the autophagy. Remember, that's a process where your body's eating the bad cells. That's a catabolic process. Too much of that, it could be not good. You could become catabolic. Your immune system become too low. So too much autophagy is not good. Therefore, too much fasting could be not good. The other side is the mTOR. So this is the pathway that eating protein, higher calories, higher carbs, everything the bodybuilders do stimulates mTOR. Long-term, that will age you prematurely. Long-term, this will cause a lower immune system. The magic is autophagy and mTOR spikes. That's famine and feast. Feast, famine, right? So the feast is the mTOR, the famine's the autophagy. You need them both. But you have people lining up on both sides. You know, the vegan cycle, you know, the low calorie people live longer. Look, the Biosphere 2 project, when in laboratory, it looked so clear. To live longer, the only thing that holds up is eating less. So whether it's, you know, animals, fruit flies, feed them 25 to 30% less. They lived double their age. Let's do it. So they created the Biosphere Project. 2 years in the perfect environment. 30% restriction in calories. Failed. Oh, they triggered certain genes like the SIRT1, look like the longevity gene. They came out catabolic. So they were caloric restricted 30% for 2 years. Their immune system got so low that in the wild or in natural, they would have died. I mean, they came out immune compromised, catabolic, and not a healthy state. It was an absolute fail. What we take from that is short-term caloric restriction, fasting state, 5 days, no problem. Long-term problem. Short-term, high protein, high calories, no problem. Long-term, age prematurely. I think right now everybody's missing this. I think that everyone's in this camp or that camp. And the problem is we need both. And again, I bring this argument out in my book. I think that I'm one of the first to make the argument. Scientists get it. I think it's these camps that we need to shake it up.
I read on your blog about overtraining. Could you please speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when we look at, I made a comment earlier that I've done telomere testing to look at your cellular age versus your actual age. There's a new test called a DNA methylation test that we're experimenting with. It's so accurate that insurance companies are starting to use it to basically tell you, you know, here's what your monthly rate is, you know, because it's so accurate they can almost predict when you're going to die. Kind of scary, but very, very accurate. One of the things that's coming out of this research is that people who exercise more are actually having worse results. So that means they're overtraining. So I think right now, because we have a weight problem, you don't have to have a weight problem to be obese. You can have a weight problem, what I call skinny fat. People are losing muscle and then they have fat in the wrong places. Both of those scenarios are a cellular issue. Both of those are very unhealthy states. But the point is because of this epidemic, people are going and exercising more and more and more and more. and it's very in vogue, but I'm a believer in exercise. Don't get me wrong, but over-exercise is aging you prematurely. And it's not my opinion at this point. It's studies show it. I exercised this morning. If I'm sore, I'm tired, I take a break, right? If I don't get good sleep, I have an Oura ring. I don't have it on right now, but if I don't get good sleep, I don't exercise. I'll just rest, or maybe I'll just walk outside or do something. So the point is that you have to listen to your body. People don't. They're constantly doing high intensity, very bad move. So I spoke about diet variation. We should have a conversation about exercise variation. Again, same principle. Intense, not so intense. Intense, not so intense. Most people are going too intense too often, or just not varying their diet. Maybe they're always moderate. You need the high and the lows.
Yeah, that's so important to know. A lot of people don't even talk about that.
True. It's true. I might get hate mail from all of this because I know people line up in these camps, or you'll get the hate mail, I guess. I don't know, but you can send it my way. I'm used to it. You know, but what I'm saying is true. And I think that, you know, it's very difficult to pull people out of the dogma, you know, that is there. But I think that where we are, I think we all have to answer the question, is it working? The detox we're doing it's wrong. We've bought into a lot of bad stuff, and I see it just go on and on. You know, it's this is the way people do detox, and it seems like it's going to go on forever. It's like the government gets a hold of low-fat diets, and you turn on your television, it's still about low-fat, low-calorie. It just seems like things go on, right? And in our alternative world, it happens too. You know, the detox principles are the same, even though they've been proven wrong for so long. If I hear one more thing, you know, about Corella being the metal magnet, it's very disturbing to me. And again, in a lot of these dietary strategies, we have the same thing. How many fasting myths, you know, do we have to, you know, hear about your body's going to eat all your muscle away? You know, it's simply not true. Your body's smarter than that.
Excellent. Thank you so much for explaining that. Dr. Pompa, is there anything else you want to share with us?
Well, I mean, obviously, I hope people get my book, and I hope people go to my podcast, my website. There's amazing information there that years of doing this and from pain to purpose is why it's there. So
that's it. Which book are you referring to?
It's called Beyond Fasting, and you can go to beyondfastingbook.com to get it. But you know, let's give a link, and we'll give some type of discount for the book for your viewers here. So we'll make sure that happens, and you can, you know, put that in here as well. So,
oh, fantastic. And the name of your website is?
It's drpompa.com. So dr and then P-O-M-P-A.com, drpompa.com.
And you also work online with patients?
I do. My patients, that's all I do now. I don't have a brick and mortar. So I coach people from all over the world, and I do it via Skype or just like this.
All right. Dr. Pompa, thank you so, so very much for sharing your time and your wisdom with us. It was really so interesting to talk to you. I really appreciate you sharing your time.
Thanks for having me on the summit. Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you so much for joining. Blessings to you and everybody watching. Thank you. Bye-bye.